Discovering stories of people living out their beliefs in our culture, communities, and the public square. And finding courage, determination, and hope. Welcome to Faith Radio's On the Road. Now, here's Ryan Thomas.
All in all, things couldn't have been much better for fifth grader Jonathan Friesen. He was the teacher's favorite and a bit of a grade school star in his small town in the Minnesota woodlands. But then an illness would come into his life, which would lead to what he describes as his lost years. Yet in those dark times, he would discover a love for writing, a passion that would eventually bloom into a new career as an author and a speaker, and give him a platform to speak into the lives of thousands with a unique voice he may never have found otherwise. Jonathan Friesen is an author, a speaker, and youth writing coach from Mora, Minnesota. His first young adult novel, Jerk California, received the ALA Schneider Award. When he's not writing, speaking at schools, or teaching, Jonathan loves to travel and hang out with his wife and three kids. And sir, it is tremendous to have you here. Welcome to you, and a great day to you as well.
Well, thank you very much.
So how are you today? How are you feeling with the cold? And tell us a little bit about what you've been up to career-wise lately.
Well, weather-wise, I am feeling mighty fine. What have I been up to? I've been doing quite a bit of speaking, actually. And so traveling the country, that's been a nice opportunity for me. And again, yeah, in your intro, you kind of mentioned it, talking about the various pieces of my life that were shaped by Tourette's syndrome and yes, and faith, and how those two interacted with each other. That's kind of what I've been up to.
It's very good, sir. And you're a product of Mora, Minnesota, and the word is that you're still in state. You're still living on this remarkable horse farm with a growing menagerie of beasts. Can you confirm these reports?
No, I can't. I'm not a product of Mora. I mean, I moved up there. I think there was my wife made it. We kind of made an unspoken vow that at some point I would take her into the country. At some time I must have made that when we got married. And then I made good on my vow, and about 10 years ago I moved up to Mora. And I have been there for about the past 10 years. So I'm not really a product of Mora, but I am still there now. We're up there with all the chickens and the dogs and all the other things.
That's very fair.
Yes.
Well, before we head back to the beginning of your story, sir, I was intrigued to ask this first off, because it seems as though young adult fiction in these past several years has taken a central place in our culture with these huge franchises, many of them dystopian in nature, like The Hunger Games. You entered that realm as well with your book, Aquifer. But these are gaining an audience of all ages. And do you have a sense of why that genre seems to be speaking to us so powerfully today?
You know, that's a great question. I have a feeling that there is just this ability for a young adult to perhaps feel something in a very profound way, and authors in touch with that. We write for the crowd who everything is big. It, whether or not it's a catastrophe, it's huge. Whether it's a wonderful thing that happens, it's the best. So the whole genre is based on kind of bigness and passion, and I think that as we get older, sometimes we kind of lose that as we get into our lives and we get into our worlds and our 9-to-5s. And there's part of us, I think, that kind of longs to be part of the adventure again. And I think young adult literature allows us to kind of become that kid for just a little while before we have to put food on the table for the kids.
Wow, that's so true, isn't it? I mean, I think of the Chronicles of Narnia and Lewis, and as a child reading those books and being able to imagine it in this titanic way. And even though I enjoyed the movies that were made recently within the past decade, it wasn't quite the same, was it? And that must just be something about our ages.
I have a feeling that it is, that we become, and for very good reasons, but we become something else. Yeah. And we long for something before.
So when we talk about your life story, you're on the road for Faith Radio. You start with the fifth grade often when you talk about it, noting that that may be an unusual place to start, but that it was a pretty good year for you. So fill in that picture for us a little bit of where you were in fifth grade. And also, too, did you have a faith as a young person?
You know, I did. I did. My parents did a wonderful job of instilling that in our home. So that was a very grounding thing. I start in fifth grade. I don't know because my fifth grade year was unique, but because when I went and ended up teaching, I ended up in fifth grade for the majority of my time. And I received something when I was teaching in fifth grade. I felt like, yes, I was giving. I was teaching. I was doing all the things I was supposed to. Yeah, things were happening. So if you were in my fifth grade class, you got what you were supposed to get. By the same token, I received something. And what I received was kind of the gift of a childhood again, because things got really rough for me in seventh grade. And that's where my years, or I guess my lost years that I often refer to them as, began. And year after year of teaching and never graduating fifth grade when I got older. So there year after year, but it slowly did something for me. And I think when there are gaps in our childhood that are extremely painful, and then you have an experience that fills it in like that, it's pretty profound. So I start with fifth grade. I think it's much because I taught there is. Anything else?
Understood. That's the voice of Jonathan Friesen. He's an award-winning author and international speaker in studio with us today here on the road for Faith Radio. And you've talked about being a bit of a teacher's pet, a bit of a grade school star. But soon after that, as you mentioned, in seventh grade, you begin to struggle with this illness. So can you walk us through that period and explain how it began to enter into your life?
Right. So Tourette, which is one of the pieces of my life that kind of threw me for a loop, actually started when I was about 6 years old, and tics started to become a piece of what happened to me on a daily basis. And my family really didn't know what was going on. I didn't know what was going on. I just knew my muscles were moving, and I couldn't stop them from doing that. And year after year, it got progressively worse. More and more pieces of my anatomy are flying around at the same time, and I'm kind of wondering what's going on. And then came seventh grade, and because things were still maybe reasonably adequate as far as relationally, but seventh grade epilepsy came as well, and I started to have seizures. And when that happened, it really drove me out of the world, if you will. I kind of retreated into my own place, my own home, and I really didn't come out again for another couple of years. It took me a long time to feel as though I was worth anything. I really took, my worth is what really took a hit. And even though, you know, raised again in a household of faith, that doesn't mean that we aren't going to have those times where we feel so small, and we just can't find God in it at all. And I couldn't find him for a couple of years. That's was my condition. And it wasn't until about 10th grade that I began again to take some chances, take some risks. So it was a painful couple of years.
And you speak about the physical obstacles that having those conditions presented you, but it sounds like, just hearing you retell it, that the social component of it might have even been more difficult for you. I mean, what types of challenges did that present really for you?
Well, you know, when you're in seventh grade, everybody is leaving their parental nest, as it were, trying new things, getting to know new people. At least that was my kind of take on what was happening around me. And I
was becoming more dependent. I didn't want to go places for fear of a seizure taking me. And I didn't want to be in front of people for fear of perhaps some mockery. So while most people were becoming less dependent on parents, I was becoming more. And all of that just weighs heavy on those years when you're trying very hard to look very good for everybody else. And heaven forbid there be a pretty girl in my area, because goodness, there is another reason why I wanted to look pretty put together. But when your body's flailing around, it's kind of hard to look, and it's hard to look like you want to.
Well, in speaking to the epilepsy side of it there, but when it comes to Tourette, we have an increasing knowledge and an increasing awareness of the term, but I imagine we also have a lot of misconceptions too. What did that mean for you, and what were the real symptoms that you dealt with on a daily basis?
Sure. So, you know, and our understanding of Tourette has really grown in recent years, but even as late as 1970, we really didn't see it as it is. My pediatrician at the time would tell my parents that all of the movements that I did, which included you know, fast eye blinking, shaking my head dramatically, my arms kind of punching at the sky, and my body tensing up, that all those movements I was doing because I wanted attention. And that was my pediatrician talking. And, you know, we believe those people who are in authority.
Yeah.
And so when the doctor says to my parents, you know, he's just trying to get attention, you know, he can stop this stuff. It's what our family kind of operated under. It was what we were told. So it became a real painful reality and a real confusing reality for me, because I didn't want to be doing what I was doing, but here I'm being told I can stop it. So my life just didn't make sense to me.
Sure.
So that's kind of where I was at.
Understood. The remarkable story of Jonathan Friesen today on the road. He's an award-winning author and international speaker here on Faith Radio, and I'm Ryan Thomas. You've talked about discovering a love for writing during that time, which you talked about as being such a dark time, but saying that you were writing to survive. So how did writing sustain you in that way?
Well, I've always been kind of a storyteller. I guess I'll call myself that. Good at telling stories. I mean, I could come up with something quickly that made, maybe, I don't know if it was a story or if it was a fib. You can kind of maybe go either way with that. But in any event, so I always told stories. And writing at that time, it was an outlet. I was not writing long odes. I wasn't writing poetry. I was basically writing just little statements, and actually writing more songs. I was doing some songwriting even, because I didn't want to write long. but it did, getting my feelings out on paper did something. It did not a lot, but it did something. And it was sort of the beginning of me being able to express a pain I was feeling in some other way than, or some positive way, was getting it out. And so that was, I guess, where those moments of sanity were in that time, was just getting something out on paper. Yeah.
So you're grappling with this time. Some years pass. You head to college. Your health really begins to improve. You've talked about, you describe it as a cloud lifting. Mm-hmm. What does that look like for you? How did the cloud begin to lift?
A time where there was a greater clarity and greater acceptance of me. You know, school was such a hard time, because it's one of those only times in our lives when we're all thrown together with human beings of our own grade and our own age. It's just kind of an unreal situation. And we're trying to impress each other. And then you get out in the world and you realize, okay, I guess we're not all competing with each other. And it was a strange realization. I kind of had to relearn some things, and I had learned them wrong the first time. I believed that I was, in the pecking order, I was at the bottom. And to all of a sudden look around and realize, well, no, I'm where I am, and to get to know me as me, actually, my Tourette tics started to go away. And they're not gone, but they started to go away and severely or dramatically decreased simply in that self-knowledge that this is who I am, and it's okay to be that person.
Yeah.
And that alone did a wonderful thing as far as how I felt. It was like a kind of a realization, a cloud lifted. I don't have to perform for all these hundreds of students anymore. I can just be me.
And that's a simple truth, but profound, isn't it? And did your faith play a role in that, knowing that God shaped you to be the person you are and feeling as though I don't really have to apologize for this at all?
Yeah, and it did. Absolutely it did. And for that, I kind of give credit to my grandmother, my 95-year-old grandmother. Aren't a lot of people who would have a best friend, who's their 95-year-old grandmother. But I think she was mine. And I would drive down to Kansas, and I would sit in her kitchen with across the table, and she would just listen to me, and I would tell her how miserable I was and how, but she would just listen and say a couple of things. But what the message I received from her was just how loved I was and how confident she was in me going forward. I got so much hope after being in her presence, such a incredible woman of God. And she, more than anybody else, gave me this sense of being, Jesus with skin on, that this is not, you're not in the middle of something, you are at the beginning of something. And all this stuff that you have gone through that for you has been very painful, it was there. And now you have the opportunity to do something positive with it, which was a real twist for me to think that I'm not just escaping something, it's actually something that can be used going forward. So that was, she really, my grandmother, she's since passed on. I owe her quite a debt.
Wow. That's really cool. That's really cool. And you mentioned it in passing, you found teaching when you went to college. You got your teaching certificate, and you talked as well about the kids that you taught being a healing component in your journey as well. But how did that whole process move you toward that career as an author and a writer of words? Because you mentioned before that you never anticipated being an author.
No. The two things I was never going to do when I was younger was, one was write, because my hand was jerking so much. That was irritating, and I wasn't going to stand in front of anybody and speak because they might make fun of me, and that's all I do now. So absolutely. No, that wasn't my future. How that all happened, honestly, there's no fancy story with it. I wish I could say that I woke up and had this vision, but it's not what happened. I just decided, I'd like to try to write a book before I die. And I was pretty young, but I was realizing that, we're mortal. I might as well start now. And so I was, in my 30 somethings, and said, I was going to try it. And so I tried it. And it took a long time to figure it all out. But it worked out. God must have been in it somehow. That Jerk California was the first published effort, and that did very, very well. And since there have been eight others, a book called Both of Me being the most recent, which actually, even though it's not about Tourette syndrome, is probably the most about me, in that the short version of that is it's a young man with two identities inside himself, and it's about the girl who falls in love with half of him. And it, too, is a road trip book, much like Jerk California is. But I think we all have that in us. We have those two. We have two different people, in a sense, two identities. Some we show to some people, some we show to others, some we show to God, some we show to our families, and just that kind of hiding part of us. And when we can kind of come together, when those two parts kind of gel, I think something beautiful happens, and God says, "Yep, this is how I actually made you to be." So it feels much more my story even than this, which is a story about a young man with Tourette's.
That's the voice of Jonathan Friesen. He's an award-winning author and an international speaker here on the road for Faith Radio, and I'm Ryan Thomas. You talked about your California, you talked about some of your latest work and a number of books, and I want to let you have the opportunity to talk about where people can go to learn more and potentially obtain some of these excellent works. But one of the things that's distinctive, I think, about your books in reading Jerk California specifically is you talk about these times of darkness, you talk about these times of struggle, but it is not a given in 2016 that there's any hope in the midst of struggle. I mean, there's a lot of stories out there that are just a lack of hope, and that's it. End of story. But yours, there does seem to be a hope that's consistently all throughout, mm-hmm. woven through the story. Is that important to you? Is that conscious?
That's probably the only thing that's conscious. And when I start to write a book, you know, there is kind of a little, I don't know where I received this, where I heard it. I know I didn't make it up, but just to start out every time that I write and say, you know, God, help me to write something that makes you smile. And that little phrase speaks to me about hope. I mean, I'm writing for young adults, and one thing they're very good at is figuring out if you're writing a message book. And so you can't, that's not what I want to do. And I just want to tell a good story. But at the same time, the one thing I feel very strongly that I am responsible for is, yeah, we live in a very dark world. If you go to Barnes and Noble, you can find any number of books, black on the spine, that are pretty sad, actually, when you get done with them. So if I can put a book on there that has something of hope, boy, I feel like I've done a good thing.
Well said. Well said. Well, talk a little bit, if you would, about your writing process there on the farm, because you've painted some pictures of four-wheeling and chickens and various beasts. And so when do you have the time to actually sit down and write? And where does the inspiration come from?
I don't know about the – that's the question that I do not know how to – where do we get inspired for anything? I think it has to do with just finding an interesting question that pops into your head and saying, I wonder what would happen. Happen if, as far as the time, you know, that's I guess the bugaboo for everything is figuring out when we're going to do those things that we're passionate about and somehow do that around family. What I've always wanted to do is and I haven't always succeeded, but when impossible, said first I'm going to do family, and the time that I have left, I'm going to write. And do that in that order instead of I'm a writer and whatever I have left goes to my family. So sometimes that means I don't get to writing in a day. And sometimes it means maybe I get 5 or 6 hours in a day. But I felt blessed. I think God has honored that ordering of a life with the family first. And so that has been a good thing for me to do. Up there with the chickens is true. I listen to those buggers go off and make sounds that I don't sound like unhuman sounds. I guess they are unhuman sounds. They're chicken sounds. Well, they're fun to listen to, and they remind me that I'm out here in the middle of nowhere, and it's a good place to be.
Amen. Amen. As a fellow dweller originated from the middle of nowhere, I can confirm. Well, Jonathan Friesen, we don't want to let you go before we mention to people, if they've been listening today and just encouraged, inspired by your story and by your work, where can they go to learn more about you and pick up books like Jerk California?
Sure, absolutely. There's a website they absolutely could visit where there's everything me, and that would be www.jonathanfriesen, F-R-I-E-S-E-N. www.thebestofmorrah.com. And if they just say to themselves, you know what? Forget the website. I need to buy a book. They could go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble or any place fine books are sold. And you could find any number of books. Again, the Jerk California being the first, both of me being the most recent, and the next one coming up at the end of the year is called Unfolding. Very excited about that one. So, hey, there's lots to choose from.
Lots indeed. And it has been a real pleasure having you here, sir. Thanks so much for taking the time to share your story with us and being with us today.
Oh, it's been a joy. Thank you, sir.
Thanks for sharing in the story of this latest episode of Faith Radio's On the Road. For more on today's conversation and the full podcast archive of all our episodes, look for On the Road when you visit myfaithradio.com.